Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that is, again, regrettably missing its heart and soul, Mary Pat Truthart, who at this very moment is likely exploring some Florida beach community. She has such a tough life. Anyway, that leaves Nathan and me to tackle the three films that we most recently saw, at least two of which have a relationship with Lorne Michaels and the long-running comedy show Saturday Night Live. The first is director Jason Reitman's film titled simply Saturday Night, followed by Josh Greenbaum's documentary Will and Harper that features former SNL cast member Will Ferrell, and finally we have Lee, which is a biopic of the late fashion model-turned-war photographer Lee Miller, as directed by Ellen Kuras. First, though, live from New York, it's Saturday Night. After 50 years, we've become accustomed to spending 90 minutes every Saturday night watching the show that was first titled Saturday Night, but became known as Saturday Night Live. Back on October 11, 1975, though, no one, not even producer Lorne Michaels, was certain that the show would work. That doubt is at the heart of Jason Reitman's depiction of the events leading up to that first night. Co-written by Reitman and Gil Keenan, the film Saturday Night is told more or less in real time, at least it appears so because the deadline for the show's premiere is mentioned pretty much every 5 minutes, and with a cast, most of whom are unrecognizable, at least to me, that matches, again, more or less, the characters, the movie scoots along toward its climax with a mix of comedy, drama, and the sweat-stained intensity of a looming potential disaster worthy, at least at times, of the best versions of the show itself.
And like your average episode of Saturday Night Live, there's some good stuff in here. And there's some bad stuff in here. And I will say this as a caveat at the top. Take everything I say with a grain of salt because I've always been something of an SNL history geek. My brain is just filled with useless facts about this show. And so I'm not sure if knowing who these people are before you go into the theater is a help or a hindrance when watching Saturday Night. There were characters who, of course, are fictional approximations of real people who I wasn't totally sure. Is that a real person? Who is that? Other people you will know right away, like, oh, that's supposed to be John Belushi. That's supposed to be Chevy Chase, obviously. And this movie, which was directed by Jason Reitman, whose father, Ivan Reitman, directed a lot of the earliest SNL movies or produced them, Animal House, Meatballs, Stripes. So he obviously has a deep personal connection to this. It's trying to remind us that there was a time when Saturday Night Live, or Saturday Night, as it was known then, was a scrappy upstart when the young lunatics took over the asylum from the stuffy old timers, because we're reminded time and again in this movie, Saturday Night, that variety TV in 1975 was particularly arthritic and very corny.
Now, in fact, ABC at the same time had Live with
Saturday Night Live with Howard Cosell. So that's why this show was called Saturday Night and not Saturday Night Live, because that title had been taken. The Howard Cosell show did not last very long.
Thank God.
They took that title. But it was at a time when this show, which nobody really saw coming, pushed television into a more adventurous direction. Of course, now, nearly 50 years later, SNL is the establishment.
Yep.
It is kind of the creaky old timer, even though they do keep bringing in young blood every few years. And I haven't watched SNL, like a new episode of SNL, in quite a while. I found it to be very stale and toothless.
We watch it on Peacock afterwards.
I'll watch, you know, every once in a while, one of the sketches goes viral.
Depends on who the guest host is.
Oh, sure. And I also think that it is producing really great talents. I mean, just in the last few years, people like Bowen Yang and Sarah Sherman, who have really interesting comic voices. But going back to the movie Saturday Night, I think the bad part of this film, because I mentioned the good and the bad, is the screenplay, which Jason Reitman wrote with Gil Keenan, who's his regular collaborator. I just think it has so many groaners and obvious cues that you would expect from this kind of biopic, period piece, however you want to describe it. And it has all of these characters talking as if they know they're going to be historically significant. There's one particularly bad scene between John Belushi and Gilda Radner, who are the only members of the Not Ready for Primetime Players that are no longer with us, that I thought was just really corny. It's got that walk and talk, ticking clock kind of energy to it that sort of reminds you of Aaron Sorkin's stuff. Remember, he did that show Studio 60 that was taken off the air by 30 right. Rock, but it also has the structure of kind of like an underdog sports movie mm-hmm. where all of these people finally have to come together at the end and put on the big show. I just don't really think any of that worked. But I think we can talk about this too, because you mentioned the actors in your intro for Saturday Night. I do think there are some really fresh performers in here, like any cast of SNL. I think there's some really cool on the up actors that are playing very familiar parts. And I think that's where the strengths of this movie lie.
Well, I would take issue with one thing. First of all, let me give a little bit of history. In 1975, I was working at a job that every other Saturday night would have me working till midnight. And on those nights, my friend and I, Ed, would race home so we could capture the last hour or half an hour. And that was John Belushi, Gilda Radner, Dan Aykroyd. You know, it was the year before even Bill Murray came right. on. And we had never seen, the nation had never seen anything like that. It was fresh and new. And as you say, it was the new kids on the block. It was so, so funny. Even the bad parts, the parts they hated, like the bees, which is a big part of Reitman's film, it was funny to us. The land shark was funny sure. to us. Everything was funny to us. And so I look back on it with a sense of history. And so I think it definitely is a help to know who these people were and what happened to them. And there's the one scene, which is maybe something you're referring to, but it's a scene that happens between Chevy Chase and Milton Berle,
yeah.
which is a name that most people today, your age and younger, they're going to go, Who is Uncle Milty?
And why is he important
exactly.
to the story, right?
But it was very yeah. important. And it was actually refreshing to see this old guy put Chevy Chase in his place. So I think having some knowledge, where I was lost was, as you know, all these young actors, I didn't know hardly any of them. I recognized J.K. Simmons as Uncle Milty.
Well,
I
sure.
recognized Tracy Letts as...
He's one of the writers.
Exactly.
That, yeah,
yeah
the
one
old-timers.
Of the great writers.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, exactly. But I didn't know Gabriel LaBelle. I didn't know hardly any of these other people.
So Gabriel LaBelle, who was the star of Steven Spielberg's film The Fablemans, plays Lorne Michaels. And Cooper Hoffman, who is the star of Licorice Pizza and is the son of Philip Seymour Hoffman,
that's right,
plays
Dick
Ebersol.
Yes.
And so they're basically our two main characters.
Yeah, yeah.
And they felt like kids playing dress-up to me. They're mm-hmm. both in their
Cooper
early
Hoffman,
20s.
Exactly.
And they're playing guys in their that were at the time in their late 20s. I don't think they really work. I also think all of the comic ringers that come in playing some of the big...
Matthew Reese plays George Carlin.
And he's terrible.
Yeah.
He's so bad. And I didn't like J.K. Simmons as Milton Berle. I didn't like Nicholas Braun from Succession playing both Jim Henson and Andy Kaufman. I don't really think any of those performances work. Willem Dafoe as one of the network executives is a little bit more tolerable. The good performers in Saturday Night, I really liked Rachel Sennett, who plays Rosie Schuster, who was an original writer and was married to Lorne Michaels for a while.
Yeah.
Corey Michael Smith from the movie May December is very good as Chevy Chase. Dylan O'Brien, who's been around for a while, is very convincing as Dan Aykroyd.
Yes.
To me, the MVP of this movie is Lamorne Morris as Garrett Morris.
Yeah, he
no
was
relation.
Quite good.
The movie almost needed to be about him because he's having this revelation in the moments before air of, oh, am I just the token black guy mm-hmm. in this cast? And we realize that, yes, unfortunately, that will be your role here. They won't give you anything really to sink your teeth into the way that they did with Chevy Chase and Dan Aykroyd. All of the female cast members have this conversation at a certain point where they're thinking, are we just going to be sidelined? And then the movie sidelines them, too. It doesn't really give them much to do. But I did like that Garrett Morris performance. But yeah, I think all of those distracting performances by the bigger guys. I also think there's this concept in comedy of the hat on a hat, which is kind of complicating the premise with details that don't really need to be there. And this movie, Saturday Night, does that with its own premise. It keeps throwing all of these manufactured conflicts, things that clearly never happened. And you don't have to be an SNL history buff to think, did that really go down that way? For instance, about 10 minutes before air, and again, this is the first episode of the show. Lorne Michaels, defeated, wanders over to the bar that's next door, next door to 30 Rock, and he just happens to run into Alan Zweibel. Now, if you know anything about SNL history, you'll know that he was one of the pioneering writers, is still with us today, Alan Zweibel, a pioneering humorist, and he brings him back over to 30 Rock and says, bring your binder of jokes. And then they also decide, hey, you know who should host Weekend Update? Chevy Chase. And I'm thinking, none of this happened. Come on. And so it's just trying to add a little fuel to the fire when it doesn't really need it. And so it just feels almost like overworked in terms of its kind of screwball energy.
Yeah, I agree with you in terms of some of the ways that the plot went. But I actually liked the way it was put together. I actually liked the fact that it just moved and moved. Something I wish that the show itself did more often, that had a faster pace. Because usually these sketches, not skits, they call them sketches, they start out with a great idea, and for about 2 or 3 minutes, they're really funny, and then they just drift away.
They still have
nothing.
3 minutes to go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think that we've got two moderately thumbs up but thumbs down for Saturday night.
Yeah, I mean, if you're an SNL fan, if you're an SNL historian, you've probably seen this already. I'm sure it will be streaming soon. But like I said, there's some good stuff in there, and some of the performances are from people that you should really keep an eye out for.
Yeah. At any rate, that was our discussion of Jason Reitman's film Saturday Night. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to discuss Will and Harper and Lee. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Nathan Weinbinder and I, again, going it alone without Mary Pat Truthart, who is off traveling, we tackled Jason Reitman's film Saturday Night. Let's now continue with another referencing to Saturday Night Live, the documentary Will and Harper, followed by the biographical study of the late war photographer Lee Miller, titled Lee. First up, a bit of Will Ferrell magic. Well, a little bit, at least. Will and Harper is a documentary directed by Josh Greenbaum that explores the friendship between the popular comedy actor and former SNL cast member Ferrell and the writer he bonded with during his first season in 1995. The focus of Greenbaum's film is the road trip that Ferrell makes with the writer, Harper Steele, in an attempt to gauge both his reaction and those of others they meet during their sojourn to Steele's transition. As they trek from New York to Los Angeles, they make stops both in Steele's hometown and in various roadside cafes, truck stops, and bars that Steele, before her transition, loved to hang out at. The result is a film that is more serious than comic, which, though befitting its theme, might prove disappointing to some viewers accustomed to Ferrell's various comic antics.
Well, I had heard going into Will and Harper, multiple people, including Mary Pat, tell me, I thought this movie was going to be funnier than it was. And it is a serious film because it's dealing with serious issues. But I actually had quite a few big laughs watching this movie because these two people just kind of have one of those, it's almost like a secret language with each other where they just riff off of one another. And so I definitely laughed quite a few times during Will and Harper. And I also thought it was a pretty lovely movie. And, you know, Harper Steele loves small towns and dive bars and demolition derbies and lots of places, you know, mostly in the middle of the country that perhaps lean more conservative and might no longer be accepting of her as a trans woman.
As we find out, it's true.
But here's the thing, you know, there's a camera crew and a famous movie star there as she's making this trip. So this obviously isn't an objective look at being trans in rural America. But I think the movie does make us consider her visibility in relation to Will Ferrell's. He wants to use his fame as they go on this road trip as something of a shield for her, that he can be there as some form of protection, I suppose. But his being there also puts her in the spotlight in ways that she's clearly not comfortable with, or maybe never will be comfortable with. We don't know. And she probably doesn't know.
Particularly during an NBA basketball game in which they meet the governor of the state.
Yeah, who has all this anti-trans legislation, too. And throughout the movie, they're in these very public places where everyone is looking at them because, look, it's Will Ferrell.
Yeah, right.
There's another scene where they go to a big, gaudy steakhouse in the middle of Texas. And Will Ferrell's dressed as Sherlock Holmes we get the sense that that's just how their friendship has been over the years. And people online seem to be really pressed that Will Ferrell's friend is a trans woman and make it known. And the movie deals with that and deals with them reading these comments. And
afterwards, and hateful comments.
Yeah, really horrible stuff, which you see online. And Harper Steele is this person who, I mean, Steele is apropos, like definitely seems to have a constitution of steel about certain things and is unafraid to talk about things. And as a comedian, pushes boundaries. And yet there are moments where she's thinking, you know, reading this stuff, I try not to care about it, but it's really hard to not be affected by it. And so it's dealing with all of these things within the framework of a really fun road trip comedy between these two lifelong friends.
Yeah, and as well as introducing us to Steele's predicament, if you want to say it, it's also rationalizing or reasoning out Ferrell's own reaction, because neither of them are sure, how do we do this? How do we weather this? What's the language, correct language to use? And it's fun. It's probably not the right word, but it's educational
illuminating
to watch them struggle through this. And in that sense, I'm not trying to say that Will and Harper is a problematic view. It's not. But I do agree with Mary Pat. I wish that I'd laughed more.
Okay.
But that's just us.
I thought that it was really sweet and that it shows them.
It is really
having to re-examine certain parts of their relationship and making Will Ferrell re-examine how he is allowed to show up in the world in ways that his friend now is not, and maybe never felt comfortable in that way, because, you know, she talks about her gender dysphoria. She talks about how she never really felt comfortable in her body. And so it's got all of that. I also have to say that I also really like cheap beer and dive bars, although Harper Steele's choice in cheap beer, I questioned. She likes Natty Light, and that's maybe a bridge too far for me. But I would like to hang out with Harper Steele in a dive bar somewhere. She seems really cool and really funny. And so, yeah, I thought Will and Harper was a really sweet movie.
Yeah. At any rate, that was our discussion of the documentary Will and Harper. Let's now turn to a biopic of the late war photographer Lee Miller. That biographical study, directed by Ellen Kuras, is titled simply enough, Lee. Kuras' film tells the story of Miller, played by Kate Winslet, a one-time top fashion model who, having aged out of the business, became a respected photographer. Though her biography makes for a rich and fascinating story, the three screenwriters commissioned to write this film decided to focus on the years just before and immediately after World War II, bookended by her being interviewed by an unnamed young man played by Josh O'Connor in her later years. And yes, Miller's wartime exploits paid off with her capturing some of the conflict's most horrific crimes, especially those of the German concentration camps, but too many clunky lines of dialogue, obvious foreshadowing, and uneven acting, Andy Samberg is particularly bad, make Lee far less of a complex and interesting movie than its subject most assuredly was in real life.
Well, and there's our third SNL connection of the
show. Andy Samberg,
Andy Samberg, as far as I know, this is his first kind of dramatic role. I think he's okay as an actor, but I do think he sticks out like a sore thumb
in this movie. He's with Marianne Cotillard, Kate Winslet, Josh O'Connor. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Well, and he just, I don't know. I think it's just because I know him from all the Lonely Island movies and from SNL. He's so 21st century.
And he's
to me.
So funny, but you're right.
Yeah, and I also don't think that character ever quite pays off. There's definitely tension between him and Lee Miller because we get the sense that he has some kind of romantic feeling toward her that she doesn't reciprocate.
And he's more straight-laced than she definitely is.
He's more straight-laced. He's also having to go into these situations where he's seeing the extermination of Jewish people, and as a Jewish person, he's having a completely different reaction.
Maybe
the
one singular moment that I believed Samberg in that role, but other than that.
But I agree with you mostly about Lee. I mean, add this to the long line of biopics we've reviewed that are just totally generic and ordinary in their portraits of extraordinary people. And I think it is a pretty sketchy portrait at that.
Let me allude you to some of the lines. Here's a great line. This is by a French guy who's just come out of hiding after the war is over. Paris is like a smile where half the teeth are missing. I mean, come on. People don't talk like that in real
life.
Well,
you know, if you're doing a heightened kind of film, a line like that might not clang as much. But I do think this is going for a kind of naturalism that it doesn't apply.
Yeah.
The thing that shocked me about this was that it was directed by Ellen Kuras, who is a longtime cinematographer, a longtime photographer, and so obviously resonated with this material and has worked on movies with Spike Lee and Michel Gondry and Martin Scorsese. She shot Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, which is a gorgeous movie, and she did a great job on it. And I think that this is a movie about a photographer's eye. It's about how this woman, Lee Miller, looks at the world, and specifically how women are perceived within the world and what they're allowed to be in times of war and distress. And yet it doesn't have a distinctive visual style at all. It looks just like any other kind of buttoned up prestige period movie we've seen. And I'm really tired of movies that look like this. It's kind of washed out and bland.
I don't think it had a particular thematic style either. I mean, it tries to jam so many things in it. We've got the war. We've got a rising fascism. We've got how does a woman who is her own individual personality fit into a sexist community? You know, we've got post-traumatic stress syndrome. Mm-hmm. You know, how does the
war
affect
people? You've also got
the
rise of surrealism and how is that capturing the trauma that's going on in the world at the moment. You're right, there is a lot going on. And I also think that the framing device with Josh O'Connor, who we assume is some kind of journalist interviewing her, I didn't think that framing device worked. It felt kind of
gimmicky,
clunky. But then when it's revealed at the end what is really going on there, I mean, it's a little bit of a howler.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the movie Lee at the end shows the actual photos that the real Lee Miller took, and they're arresting photos.
Exactly.
You realize there's so much more about this person. And so I've actually done some research into her. I've read stuff about her. I've looked at more of
her
work.
This woman mingled with some of the
that.
Great names of the 20s and 30s. Mm-hmm. I mean, she learned photography under Man Ray,
who is a minor character in the movie.
There was so much to her real life that they went, well, we're just going to focus on this one aspect.
Yeah. And it's too bad that this is just another kind of by the numbers biopic about a person who was definitely not by the numbers in her life or her work.
Absolutely. At any rate, that was our discussion of the film Lee, and this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbender and I discussed Saturday Night and Will and Harper. Let's take this moment to thank Cassia Fox for both producing and engineering the show. We thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from none other than SNL producer Lorne Michaels. People go to the zoo, and they like the lion because it's scary, and the bear because it's intense. But the monkey makes people laugh. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.